This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape, well, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. I do not know when I started saying that. I don't know how that became the intro. And maybe as you're driving to work or you're at work and you're blowing off work, maybe you're going on a little morning or afternoon jog. Maybe you're just chilling in bed listening to Jonathan and what his opinions are going to be. Maybe you say that part to yourself. Strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. We've been doing this since 2006, and we've had some amazing guests, and this episode is absolutely no different. My good friend Daniel Brown is on to talk about a movie that is currently in the top 10 on Netflix here in the U.S. It is called Your Lucky Day. I think the movie starts out like a dog day afternoon in a convenience store type of scenario, but if that's all you think it is, not to say that, oh my God, I just was like, oh yeah, Sydney Lumet's dog day afternoon, that's all it is. No. Obviously, Dog Day Afternoon is just phenomenal. But plot-wise, I'm actually going to compare Your Lucky Day more to like a Joe Carnahan type movie, right? Like it's a gritty crime. But the plot-wise, it's got a little bit of Dog Day Afternoon going on, but that's not where it ends. It's not just hostage crisis, bank heist, you know, empty the register gone wrong, you know, heist without a plan, real storyline. It's actually got a bit more going on with that. And we're going to talk to Dan about that here on Geekscape. I've also got my good friend Jim from Bingetown TV, which I think is like amazing. If you're not listening to the Bingetown TV podcast or its many iterations here on the Geekscape network, then I don't know what you're doing. Maybe you're not a TV fan. Jim's going to be on throwing some input in on news reviews and on Dan's movie, and it's going to be awesome. Our good friend Dylan from Christmas 365, which is another Geekscape show, he's not on the show. He wanted to join us, but turns out spring came around, and Dylan really only does podcasts from November, from in winter. He only does the Christmas stuff. No, I'm kidding. Something happened technically on Dylan's end with his internet, and he wasn't able to join us, but I love Christmas 365. And let me tell you, in those Christmas months, like November through like mid-January, there's no hotter show on the Geekscape network. All right? I don't know what it is, but we have a year-long Christmas show, year-round, 365. Dylan's a co-host on that with Matt Kelly, and it is a juggernaut here on the podcast network for like several months there in the winter months. And we're going to have a ton of that here after the intro. I just got to pause real quick because there's been so much going on that like Geekscape is getting crazy. I'm recording on a Thursday, Geekscape. If you're watching this live on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitch, usually I do the show on a Monday or a Tuesday at the latest. Here I am on Thursday. It's been so hard to get a Geekscape going. That being said, there's been tons of content, not just from the other shows on the network, but like this very show. Did you guys know that Geekscape was named after my favorite sci-fi show of all time, Farscape, which was one of the original Sci-Fi Channel shows that was co-produced with the Jim Henson Company and has Muppets, like space Muppets in it? Yes. And this week, actually like Tuesday, 2 days ago, was Farscape's 25th anniversary. And what did we do? We released a video from the Geekscape archives. This is a never released, shamefully, this is a never released conversation one-on-one. It's 25 minutes of me talking one-on-one with Rocky O'Bannon, who is an awesome sci-fi TV creator. He's a TV showrunner, and he created Farscape. And he and Brian Henson put this weird sci-fi show together. It premiered 25 years ago. And if you go to the Geekscape TV YouTube channel, which maybe you're watching this conversation on right now, we have that 25-minute conversation. Will I end up taking the audio and putting it later on this Geekscape feed if you're listening on the podcast? Yes, I will. But I'll probably do it a bit later just to give Daniel's episode a chance to breathe. We have another episode next week, so I don't want to stuff it. And then speaking of that, last week, you guys loved the story of Blink-182 and interviewing Blink-182 dressed as Mexican wrestlers. That was an awesome episode with Fernando Pinto. His Kickstarter is still going. But I found the interview from November 1999 at the Electric Factory in Philadelphia. Kevin and I dressed as Mexican wrestlers interviewing Blink-182. I found it. I found the audio. We absolutely sound like we're 19, 20 years old. And it's cringy, but I found it. And Kevin and I are going to do a commentary track to it. We're going to play the Blink-182 interview with us. And it's really cringy. We were such edgelord stunt. We were just doing a stunt. We thought it'd be funny to interview the band dressed like Mexican wrestlers. And they were cool with it, except Travis. And having reheard it for the first time in 25 freaking years, it's a cringe fest. So Kevin and I are going to do a commentary on it and re-release it here on the feed. But Kevin also lives in freaking Singapore, which is 15 hours earlier than Los Angeles. So it's going to take a little bit of figuring out when to do it, because I just have to do simple math, and that's hard for me. All right. I think I checked all the boxes on things to mention to you, why you should subscribe. Let's start the podcast up. It's going to be so much fun. I'm so glad you're here for it. And let's get it going. All right, Geekscapers, let's get to it. We have a fun episode. I actually had a conversation with Matt Kelly about a week and a half ago and said, hey, man, like, we're having a baby, Heidi and I, not Matt and I. And it's going to, as I just said, Geekscape's going to be really hard to schedule around. I don't know what to do. I need help. And he said, why don't you bring on some other people from the Geekscape Network to, like, do a little bit more panel discussion, do a little bit more news and reviews. And I said, awesome. So I got Jim from Benchtown TV here. And we also got a filmmaker and a creative. So it's not just news and reviews. We're going to be talking to Daniel about his film. Let's bring them all in. This is how it's going to be. And I actually had a blast with Fernando last week talking news and reviews. So go listen to that. Not to say that I don't like creator interviews, because two episodes ago is Chris Black, who's show running Monarch, Legacy of Monsters on Apple TV. And I love talking to Godzilla. So why not listen to that episode too? Okay, let's get to it. Here's Daniel, who made this movie, Your Lucky Day. And here is Jim from Bingetown TV. My boys, how are you?
Hello, hello.
Jim, you've been on the show before, right?
I have, yes. It's been a while, though, but yeah, I have been on. The Geekscape intro gets me pumped every time I hear it.
Oh, for real? Thank you, because to me, I'm like, oh, that footage is old. Let's replace it. Jonathan, you were a young, spry man when you had that.
I was like, is there a camera on me while I'm backstage because I'm dancing and everything?
That's good to hear. That's good to hear, because I'm always thinking, like, how do I update the different parts of Geekscape? Because it's been going on for so long that I'm like, okay, what parts finally just need to be updated? Like the X-Men 97 intro?
Ooh.
Bro, I don't know if you're watching that.
I am watching. I watched them both today.
There's two episodes out of this X-Men 97. We talked about it last week, and holy shit, that hits hard. Like, they read
it, does, yo,
Daniel,
really.
You know what we're talking about, right? You remember the old 90s.
I think I saw a clip. I know about, I mean, I was a big fan of the X-Men back in the day. I haven't seen the new show, but that doesn't mean, but I saw something.
Let me just prep you for this. They remade the intro shot for shot with a little bit of extra spice, some new characters in it. And the song has, like, an extra, how would you describe that, Jim? The song hits.
It does. It really does. It's It's enough nostalgia where you're feeling the intro. It's obviously the intro, but there's just a little twist to it where you're like, all right, it's updated and I'm loving it. It's
remember like when they just released this Shredder's Revenge redo for the Ninja Turtles like sequel arcade game style, and they got like Mike Patton from Faith No More and Mr. Bungle to redo the Ninja Turtles theme song. It feels like that. It's just so hype that it hits. And I'm like, holy shit. And I gotta tell you, the X-Men, the writing is awesome. The writing is really good, and the art. There's so much in each episode that somebody said this is the best thing that Marvel's done in a few years.
I believe
quite a slight. I was like when I read it, I was like, it's a bit of a slight because Marvel's done some pretty cool stuff. You know, we got to remember like Guardians 3 came out last year, and
Guardians 3 was phenomenal. It really was.
Hold up, and then I watched the X-Men 97 episodes, and the writing. I mean, beyond the animation just being amazing and that they actually give Cyclops like concussive blasts. So like if he shoots, he also slides so he can use it to move himself around the room and be like a tactician. And like he's awesome. Yep. He's now the badass leader of the X-Men. But the art is amazing and the writing is great. And they don't stop. They're going right into like Trial of Magneto and all this stuff. And I don't want to spoil anything, but like I think they're setting us up for some really amazing classics from the mid to late 80s into the 90s stories that the 90s cartoon did such a good job of kind of doing a best of the X-Men storylines. And I think this is not skipping a beat. It's wonderful. And the writing's so good.
It's been great.
Is there how many episodes is it going to be?
There's only two so far. I don't know how many they're going to be. There's two seasons finished. And my only complaint is that they're not releasing the episodes on Saturday mornings.
That's so true.
I know the audience grew up, baby, but we're here doing Geekscape. How much did we actually grow
right.
up? You know what I'm saying? Like, welcome to Geekscape. Would we be doing this if we actually grew up? I don't think so. I know Jim's on the East Coast. Daniel, where did you grow up? I actually don't know you that well. Your editor, Nick, and we used to be neighbors, and he went to film school with you. And so he's like, dude, you got to check out this movie that I edited.
Yeah. No, I grew up in Reno, Nevada.
Okay. Were you...
A little bit in Hawaii.
Were you okay with my comparison in the Joe Carnahan comparison, like tonally, stylistically on that stuff?
I mean, I like Joe Carnahan. I wouldn't take that at all in any negative way. I think anybody watching the movie is going to be a plus. And I like Joe. He's great. He was super fun. Like, what was that movie he did? That was definitely one of those inspirational movies when it came out. The one where they're like in a...
The cop one with Jason Patrick?
Narc is great.
Is awesome.
But he's like, remember he did that? He did like an early indie for like $100 or something like that. I'm sure it was more expensive than that. I can't remember what it was, but it was like one of those famous, like he did it in his friend had a used car dealership or something like that. Like
first I heard of him was Narc, and then he did a movie about Reno, Smoking Aces, which I actually think is super.
He did do it.
Super unlike that. That is a movie that guys go if you dismissed it first time it came out or just didn't see it, like. Chris Pine's in that movie before he got hot. Ben Affleck after he got hot, when he started doing the, you know, kind of like going after like character roles in it. And before he got hot, our own Deadpool Ryan Reynolds is in that movie in a great one. And I think Smoking Aces is definitely an overlooked fun movie. And that's a Reno movie right there.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah. Anytime there's a Reno movie, I do take attention. What's the, Paul Anderson did a great one too there with,
Heart Eight wasn't a Vegas movie.
No, it takes place in Reno.
That is awesome. Yeah, Heart Eight is great. Matt Kelly's in the comments because he loves his Geekscape, and he says the movie you're thinking about is Blood, Guts, Bullets, and Octane.
That is the movie I was thinking
of.
And I don't remember the exact story, but it was like a very cheap movie, right? Like it was a very low budget, like he did it with some friends that kind of like, I don't know.
I gotta find it. I honestly had not heard of it, and you're the first. I'm gonna go find it. Matt also wants to know, Jim, he wants to know, is Ben Sean Cunningham going to do a little X-Men 97?
Well, we might do a season end conversation. We obviously missed the boat on the first two episodes. I mean, I know they just came out. We could jump on it, but yeah, I guess we like to try to get them out ASAP, but, we're fully into Shogun right now. I'm texting with all of the Benchtown people telling them how good X-Men is. Because I'm the only one who's seen it so far. And I do have a few that would love to jump on, so maybe we will. There's a chance, definitely.
Yeah, and I'm going
to
argue that, in a sense, it is adjacent to your conversation about Shogun, because the first time I heard about Shogun was that I think late 70s miniseries Shogun based on the book for the early 70s that like the miniseries really established the TV miniseries as like an advertising blockbuster, because that Shogun in the late 70s, early 80s, it was still kind of a remnant when I started like growing up. People are still talking about it in like the mid to late 80s because it was a juggernaut blockbuster wise. And then I still lived through the era of like miniseries being a big thing. And Shogun was the big one. And Chris Claremont took Shogun, put a mutant called Logan in it. And that was the Chris Claremont, Frank Miller, Wolverine miniseries from the mid 80s. It's basically like Shogun with Wolverine. And y'all know that because they turned it into an actual Wolverine movie where he goes to Japan. And that's
Toranaga's in it.
Yeah, totally.
Toranaga from
totally.
Shogun.
It's completely derivative. Yes. I mean, I don't want to be rude, but it's derived. I'm not going to say it's derivative, but it's derived from the Frank Miller, Chris Claremont miniseries, which is absolutely derived from Shogun. And here we are again. Geekscape, there's only like three things that ever get made. They just get remade all the time with different people.
Right, exactly.
Dan, let's talk about making this movie, dude, because I know how much you made this movie for. It's fucking impressive. Dude, you're really talented. Not only are you really talented on the visuals and the directing, I thought that the beginning of this movie, and I actually paused it after, you know, I did this thing. As filmmakers, we do this thing where you always obsess about like the inciting incident. How much time does it take for us to know our world, know our character, know their goals, and then that's the fuse being lit, and then when does it go, right? And I paused the movie, and you got so much accomplished in 6 minutes. And in Geekscape, it's just turn it on in like 6 minutes, you're gonna be ready to go. And that there, but here's the thing: there's so much information about each character, their situations, and you didn't do it like hit over the head exposition, because that stuff will take you right out. No. But you're just putting in their hints. This the moral ambiguities, or their goals, where they are and where they want to go. And this is an ensemble, Geekscapist, so it's not easy to do. I thought that you did that so incredibly economically that I really do love your writing quite a bit.
Oh, thank you.
That's all I got.
On the writing side, I'll say I did write longer stuff at the beginning that we ended up cutting out here and there, just so I wasn't quite as sharp as I could be, but I did. You discover as you go that maybe I didn't need that, and maybe we kind of know who the characters are. And I do think Nick, who is your neighbor, and that was one of those, like, one of the conversations we had was like, how fast can we get into this movie? How much information can we sort of jettison and get us in there and get it going?
I gotta tell you, you did it in 6 minutes, 6:15. If you want to be, I mean, I paused it. I just saw it, man. I mean, okay, take away the title cards, you maybe did in 5:55, but I'll tell you, and Nick is somebody who's like, we should be working together or something like that. And I'm like, okay, I'll try to get a movie up. But Nick, like, bro, this movie is really well edited, bro. I got to give it to you, Nick. And I know I just texted with you on your phone. I thought it was great. Nick also not only told me like about working with you and how great it was and got you on the podcast, he also revealed to me that you are an incredible like liar. Because you made a comic book and you didn't effing tell me about it, Dan. And you're on Geekscape now, and I don't want this to affect your relationship with Nick, because having seen the movie you all made together, it's a beautiful relationship and it's really productive and good. I hope it continues. But he put you on blast, and in Geekscape, you don't know this, but I'm about to tell you, our buddy Daniel made a comic book called The Fox Came from the Woods, and he wasn't going to tell me. And all the talk we had leading up to you coming on this show where we cover comic books, you didn't think it was a good idea to tell me that you had made a comic book? How dare you? Explain yourself, sir. Why would you not tell me about your comic book?
I guess just because I'm kind of a nobody in all of them. So I just, you know, you want to keep that one track mind thing out there.
Daniel. If where would you talk comics if not on Geekscape, sir?
We can talk comics if you want to talk comics. You're talking about, I would say, like, as a comic person, I was excited about the 97 show only because originally there's a guy named Chase Connolly, who's an artist, who's like a artist I'm really into, and he was doing all these wonderful kind of like Kawajiri inspired X-Men drawings like 4 or 5 years ago, And when I heard he was hired onto this show, I was like, oh, there's a good sign there that they have like smart choices being made. Cause like those, I don't know, I'm sure you're making the face. Like,
Daniel, I am not as knowledgeable as you. Here on Geekscape, I'm a mile wide and an inch deep. But I know about Chase now because the dude gets he has a name card on the freaking show. Like he's not a small part of the show. He's a big part of the show.
Yeah,
the show's beautiful, and I'm going to trust that maybe he's the reason, because I'd never heard of this guy. All respect, Mr. Connell. Please come on Geekscape. But dude, the show's beautiful, and he is a major part of it. All right, let's go back to Your Lucky Day. Is this Angus Cloud's last movie? Because honestly, I didn't watch Euphoria. It felt like it was too hardcore for me. And your film is the first time I'm actually seeing Angus Cloud in anything. And he's everything that people say he is. He's magnetic.
Yeah. I know there were movies shot after ours. You know, part of the indie movie thing is it took a year and a half, I think, to sort of finish post-production. But yeah, no, there's a few movies after. I don't know how big of a role he plays in them. You know, I think that's one of those questions that I don't have an answer to. I know he's in a vampire movie called Abigail. That should be like a big, I think that looks like it'll be fun and big for him. And then he's got another movie called Freaky Tales that's also coming out. I think the director's of some Marvel movie.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
But it's a bigger film.
They did one called... It's a much bigger film. It's got Pedro Pascal.
Who's that? I'm kidding. That was a stupid joke.
He's got a couple other things coming. But I definitely feel like this might be his largest role, which is, I think, a real, really, really big shame, because he was just so wonderful and such like a charismatic, interesting guy. And I think maybe this is like the negative side of like where Hollywood is at, is I think is because he's such a singular kind of person. Maybe they were like, well, how does he become, Iron Man or something? I don't know, Iron Man.
But yeah, you know what I mean? they want to figure out how to Chalamet him or like assembly line him. And not that Timothy Chalamet isn't making artistic choices. I think like Dune 2, he's clearly awesome. And I hadn't seen Wonka, but he's clearly carries it. And he's got the star quality. The actual actor I thought of as I'm watching Angus in your film, and again, this is all a tragedy because we lost him. It reminded me of like early Vin Diesel, where he's just magnetic. In that first, maybe in Pitch Black, but really in that first Fast and the Furious, like he's a magnetic, and you understand why Spielberg saw him in that Bouncer short film that he did, and was like, I'm going to put him in my ensemble for Saving Private Ryan, and he just holds the screen. And say what you will about family and how comic booky the Fast and Furious franchise has gotten, I still think they're fun and I still watch every single one. Yeah. He has the camera loves him and he's got charisma, and sadly, having lost Angus, it's there. It makes me want to watch Euphoria, even though some of it's going to make me like, some of it's going to be uncomfortable for me to watch, but yeah. What do you think, Jim, watching this film? It's pretty impressive, Dan.
Very impressive. I just watched it. 90 minutes, action, thriller, suspense. I don't want to, it's hard to talk about it because I don't want to spoil anything. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, a lot of twists. I really enjoyed it. I haven't watched movies actually in a long, I've seen the bigger ones, Oppenheimer and everything, when I'm going to theaters, but we're doing so much with TV for Binstown that it's taking all of my time. So when I see a Netflix movie coming out, I don't really have a chance to say, okay, I'm going to watch this Netflix movie. I'm busy watching Shogun and everything that we're covering. So it was nice to sit there and have a 90-minute movie to watch. And like you said, Angus was amazing, but this ensemble cast, they're all amazing. And I have a little bit of one of those things where me and Kathleen, another Binstown TV member, we loved MTV Scream season one. And Jason Wiles is in that as a sheriff. So in seeing him, I was like, yeah, giving him a fist bump. But not that's just one of those hilarious things where it's our guilty pleasure. Not that we think it's amazing, but.
Jason, he was a wonderful guy. I'm so happy that. That's like someone's response to Jason, because he's such a wonderful
Nice little fist bump.
And Daniel, talk about the origins of the film, if you can. Like where did the idea come from? I mean, you're probably a fan of that stuff, like Dog Day Afternoon, and then it's got to go. Kind of but you took it from there, and you kept adding some more twists and turns. What's the origin? Was it In Your Life of Crime that I heard about?
What happened? I think there's maybe a number of different things that sort of all probably happened in a row where that kind of idea comes from. I think part of it was just I was at a convenience store around the corner from my house. I do love these kinds of stories, right? Like I love what's the Partner's Tale, or like they make you read it in high school, you know. Anytime there's like a bunch of people and there's a group of money, like, and people are figuring out what they want to do about it, like that's a movie I think is like a great drama. And I think I always connected to that as an idea. And then I think because it's been around for a while, I just think probably I was at a grocery store or like a 7-Eleven and I saw someone buy a lottery ticket, and just my head kind of went to like, oh, what if they had won and it was right there? What are the feelings that you would have with that? I think that's really kind of the genesis as much as anything, you know? So then I was just sort of like, oh, what's an idea that's kind of an interesting way to kind of get around this idea, yeah, and like have that big child pile of money and like make it more about like wanting to work together, and you would have to make a lie to sort of make that work, you know, because like people saw it, how do you get someone on board with that?
So much anxiety. I guess it was just sort
of... well, that's what the movie's about. Geekscape is Angus is down and out, and yeah, he's a hustler, and you like his character right off the bat, even though he's not making good quote-unquote moral choices. There's something charismatic about him. You do want him to succeed in the kind of cesspool-ish world that he lives in of, you know, pulling a little bit of small-time crimes and hustles. And he goes into this convenience store and he's looking at a porn mag, as over his shoulder, he hears somebody who you immediately don't like, this individual, because he's being so fucking racist to the store owner. Yet right, this individual wins the lotto for like 156 million. And he's got the ticket, yeah, and as Angus's character, who's already morally strained, I'll say that, is overhearing that there's a winning ticket in the store, he acts fast, and he knows he's going to steal the ticket. That being said, there's a police officer who, early in the film, first person who comes in the convenience store, I believe, maybe the second, goes to use the bathroom. We know that's a loaded gun you put in the back of the convenience store that's going to come out. And things get complicated from there. And there's a little bit of a hostage situation. And then you move away from the hostage. I don't want to talk about it, but like you move away from the expected beats. The expected beats, Geekscapist. Whatever you think this movie is at 6.5 minutes, when everything's set up and you're ready for the dominoes to start falling, you got to stick with it. You got to pay attention, because that is not what the movie is. And you got to go with it. And I love the moral twists and turns. And Daniel, the plate spinning, if anything, narratively, director-wise, writer-wise, I'm really impressed, man. That is not a hard task that you took on. This is the Ask Kiss show, but...
Yeah, I mean, perfectly said with the moral twists and turns, because... it's not just twists and turns for the sake of saying, oh my gosh, you know, first of all, I had a lot of audible damns while watching this. So, you know, and I don't do that often, but the twists and turns are based on the morality of this lottery ticket, all this money. It's not just, hey, here's a twist. There's a thought process, and you show us that when it comes to the twists that happen. And also, Angus's character's mask being the porn.
He rips the page out of the porn magazine, punches holes in it, and tapes it to his head.
Hilarious.
It's good stuff, Dale. What was some of the stuff that you were into growing up that led you into filmmaking, what point? Because like for me, I was telling Jim earlier, I actually got into this stuff really in comic books and radio and storytelling that way. But what for you, what was kind of like the onset of that drive?
I definitely think comics were a big part of it. I think that was like when I was younger, I was really into comic books. I still, and movies, I think. I think what ended up happening, I was that kind of kid who would write stories, or I would make drawings and give them to my parents and like ask them to like put punch holes in them or put staples in them. So there was like, sure, a flip book that you could look through. And that was sort of always like where my passion lied, I guess. And then what happened? I think I just signed up for a video class in high school and I got a scholarship to go to school based off this like stupid little comic book short I did where my brother
not stupid
was a superhero and I was or he was a supervillain and I was a superhero. It was like just silly, stupid shit.
I will not have you besmirch your younger self, sir. You made the choices you made. Those are the best choices your young self could have made. I will not let you besmirch your old films. Just don't watch any of mine.
Yeah.
And like, who are your heroes?
I think that, I think there's just stuff I saw when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think, like filmmaker wise or
whatever,
like,
storyteller, like obviously Stan Lee's on like, my, like Mount Rushmore, you know, people like that. You know, yeah. J.R. freaking Tolkien. Those guys were my early stories.
My heroes,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really loved, I mean, I didn't, when I still love Akira. So like, I think that was like one of the first like big things I remember really loving a
you're
lot.
You're talking about the anime, not Akira Kurosawa.
Actually, I watched Akira and okay. I do love Akira Kurosawa as well, but I
you're talking about the anime. Anime. You're talking about Tetsuo! You're talking about that one. Yeah. I got you. Tetsuo!
I had a weekend in seventh grade where we watched Akira, Vampire Hunter D,
Ninja Scroll,
and Pulp Fiction in a row.
I thought you were going to do the trifecta with Ninja Scroll.
Like, those were all like, so I think it was just like, that was a very informative weekend. And I was just, I think after that, I don't know how I could get as into anything as I was into like, oh, wow, filmmaking is amazing. You know, I've been in commercials for a long time. And I think I definitely chose that path because I was so obsessed with Ridley Scott when I was younger. I still think he's a really wonderful filmmaker. Don't get me wrong. But I remember being like, oh, Ridley did commercials. That makes sense. That's a career path to get into filmmaking, especially when it's so foreign. Like, if you don't know anybody who's even in it. And I, you know, I'm in Reno and then I was in Hawaii. Like, there's just nobody you know who's actually working in films, at least that I had never met. So, like, I just sort of felt like, okay, there's a world here. I had been on, like, a local commercial in Hawaii. I think it's just, like, those kinds of people. Who else do I really love? I don't know. I mean, that's a weird influences, I guess. Any of those guys who kind of made a tiny little movie were like big influences, I think, like where I was like, oh, Robert Rodriguez. There's a bunch, right? Like, I feel like there's like those like really small movies.
Growing up in Austin, it was all the Church of Linklater and Rodriguez. Like in Austin, that's all I cared about. All I cared about was like, oh, I'm going to go see Dazed and Confused 17 and freaking times. And I think I might have at the old Adobe Theater there in Austin. You know, my parents, I think, got tired of dropping me off to see Days of Confused and Slacker and that stuff. Did you guys see this trailer? Speaking of Ridley Scott, did you guys see that trailer that I sent you guys for the new like Alien movie? Did you guys see that?
Alien?
There's a new Alien movie.
I saw the quick teaser.
It's called Alien Romulus, and I had not heard about it until like a day or two ago. Fede Alvarez, who did the Evil Dead remake from a few years ago for Sam Raimi, has a freaking alien movie coming out this year. It looks horrifying. And Fede Alvarez did that Don't Breathe movie. He did in the sequel. Like, is that it? Don't Breathe, where they can't make a sound.
Yeah, yeah.
The dude is like a really
There's the blind guy, right?
Great filmmaker. He's a really good like horror filmmaker. And now he's got this alien movie, and it looks horrifying. You see these facehuggers flinging all over the screen, attaching to people like nothing. That is scary. This is he's got a great tone on this thing. I hadn't really been excited about it. No offense, Ridley and your friends. Not been excited about an alien movie in a while. This one kind of gets me excited, and it came as like a surprise. What do you guys think of this thing?
It looks great.
I thought it was a surprise as well. Yeah, it looks really good. And I actually had to Google if it had anything to do with the little, I guess, two movies that were from Prometheus on. I didn't know if they discontinued that because I'm not fully into the Alien franchise. Like, I've seen them all. It's not my cup of tea to be watching it many times, but I was like, wait, is this related? Is this not related? I had to do a little Google search on it because, again, just like you said, it came out of nowhere. I had no idea it was coming.
It makes me think like maybe the marketing budgets and I don't know, but like they become so acute that they have to be strategic. Like, studios are trying to find how to crack the code to get people like Jim away from their TV shows, right? And like Jim said, and this is not a slight to Jim, like, I love going to films. Like, for me, it's hard to watch TV because I get antsy at home and I need to like go write or do something, but I have to be removed from any distractions to sit, to go to a movie theater and sit in a movie. And so TV, I'm always thinking like, about all the different distractions that happen in your home, right? From the phone to the guns on the eat, or, you know, you're my wife, or like your roommates and stuff. And so film for me is like really the thing. This had me like, I was like, hell yes, I'm there for an alien movie. And like, and we got some good stuff coming. Like, there's a second Furiosa trailer that gave us a more of a look at Chris Hemsworth's character. I think he's the villain. And it's like, it's Anna Taylor-Joy versus Chris Hemsworth in the desert as an origin of Furiosa. I'm down with that. My biggest question on Furiosa is that first Fury Road was so intent on practical effects, which is psycho, and stunt work. And there's clearly some digital augmentation, but this one feels more digital than Fury Road did. And I know Fury Road, it probably almost killed some people with the amount of work that went into it. It was going to war on a film set. Am I wrong, Jim, that this feels more kind of digital or digitally augmented, or maybe shot on like a volume stage? Hopefully I'm wrong, but like, maybe I'm not wrong. Fuck it. No, hopefully I'm wrong. The movie will be badass. Volume stage or no volume stage.
It's going to be great no matter what.
It looks a little bit more volume stage?
No, you're not. That's kind of how I took it as well. So, again, how long has it been since Fury Road?
I think it was a 2012 or 13
years.
Yeah.
I was going to say 13 or 14. Yeah. So 10 years ish. Yeah. So, I need a rewatch of that, and that was definitely one of the ones that I enjoyed. I'm in for the trailer. I enjoyed it. I'm ready to go.
What about that Crow reboot?
So for me, I didn't watch. I've seen The Crow when I was younger, but The Crow was, you know, I'm 33, and when The Crow came out, I was younger, so I haven't seen it as a more knowledgeable person. So I don't really feel like I have a right to say anything, but I thought the trailer, the action of the trailer was cool.
People lost their...
I saw all the jokes about the Joker, how he looks like the Joker from Suicide Squad.
People lost their shit online. Kind of stuff. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about with this thing, Dan? You saw that people losing their crap online about the trailer, but like, I think I'm almost close to Jim. Like, let's give me like it's terrible that like what happened on the original set, the Crow Alex Proyas is the Crow is stylistically awesome. Brandon Lee's death, obviously, absolutely a tragedy. The comic book I wasn't familiar with until The Crow came out, and then I was very familiar with it. I think it came in like an era of like music, culture, grunge, that The Crow really became almost like a like symbolic beyond just being the movie. So when this trailer came out, I think people were unfairly critical of it and very precious of the first Crow. Now, that you shouldn't be precious of something that you love like that, but
right.
But it led to people being like, F this, without a chance. Yeah. And you know what? Just tell us a good movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to diss a Crow remake, but damn, did people go nuts on
They really did. And it's happening a lot more often now, whether it's TV remakes, movie remakes in general, just like The Crow. I was like that in ways that I've learned now that it's its own adaptation. You're allowed to put it in two different things and you can enjoy it or not enjoy it based on what you're seeing. You don't have to, you know, compare it. I mean, you're obviously going to compare it no matter what in your head, but you don't have to get so upset about it. I don't understand why you need to get that upset. And that, trust me, I used to get upset when it comes to like the Harry Potter remakes, and I was a diehard with the books, and I'm like, you changed this and you changed, you know, that kind of stuff. But I've learned
you're
my
also
lesson
seven because there's been something like that. Considering you're that much younger than me, you were also like 14.
Going back to X-Men, it was unlocking things from my brain that I didn't realize. I knew I watched it, but I was seven when it came out and I had the VHSs and I was obsessed with it, but I didn't realize that I remembered so much. I'm watching like the quick flashback of the end of the first version. And then just seeing the characters come back, I was like, whoa, I'm remembering the storylines from the first TV show is definitely unlocking some childhood memories.
Specifically, like was the biggest lesson for me in like knocking stuff on the internet that you didn't have context for. And I've said it on Geekscape before, but on the old Ain't It Cool boards, do you remember that, Daniel? The Ain't It Cool? The Ain't It Cool news boards. Yes. Like I remember when they had a leak of those Bryan Singer costumes, and they were the black, maybe Matrix influenced costumes for the 2000 X-Men movie. And everybody's in black, and there's only a little bit of hint of yellow, and Wolverine's not wearing a mask, and it's totally like they were on like a white psych wallet. It was totally contextless. I was like, this tap tap tap. This is bullshit. This is gonna suck. Da da da. But then within similar to our friend Your Lucky Day, like the first shots of that Singer X-Men, and you see the concentration camps and the snow and the God and the Nazis and young Eric Lencher in the mud. I was like, they got it. I'm eating everything that I wrote on the internet. And I think that ultimately like this crow is going to be somebody's the crow. And you are a dickhead if you do not allow it. If you are so precious about things that, like Matt Kelly says, people reacted to that trailer like someone was going to smash their Criterion disc and force them to only watch the new one for the rest of their lives. And if you're that precious that you don't want to allow a story to progress to someone else, then you're just Smeagol holding onto a fucking ring, letting it rot you in a cave. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, don't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously people are going to be mad when I remake Your Lucky Day in a few years. But Dan, do you get what I'm saying? Like, you probably, as a young filmmaker, like,
no, I don't.
Had an opinion online and then went,
I feel like I love that kind of stuff. I think I used to feel differently. I think you can always just not watch the new thing if you don't want to see it. I think.
Could you imagine?
So true.
Don't have an opinion on something? Could you imagine?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to talk or of the prequel Star Wars, but I remember like after watching that in the theater, I watched it and I was like, I don't need to see the next movie. And so that I just sort of kind of carried that over. Like, I'm fine where I'm at. I don't know if I need to see.
Did you check out after episode one and just be like, it's
done? I did, because I heard it was better than episode 1.
Yeah. Was it?
I checked out. Unfortunately, I watched each one because everyone told me the next one was going to be better.
The next one's the one.
You just had to. The next one was the one. You're like, okay, well, I want a better taste in my mouth than that one. And then it didn't happen. So I think, but I did definitely, I think you just sort of just move on and don't carry an opinion about a thing you don't want to watch. Or, I try to just sort of give people space and let them make their thing. I think I'm, like with The Crow, I really loved that old movie. So it's like, this is a new thing. It's going to be a new thing. There's nothing wrong with that. For me, I think it's also interesting in a weird, I had never really put The Crow and The Joker together.
Yeah.
Other than like, but I remember when the Heath Ledger makeup came out and people compared that to The Crow.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's like weird that then there's like a, now there's a new Crow and people talk about the other
full
Joker.
Circle,
like,
I don't know, Jared like Leto.
There's like a full circle Crow connected back in. But yeah, I don't know. I think just let people watch what they want to watch.
At what point is this like a semi-depressing sign of people's literacy too? Like an actual like cinematic or cultural literacy. Not that I can improve it. Not that I can say it's actually closer to the, but like when you watch like the original Joker, like the Bill Finger Joker in the comic books, and you're like, oh, cool. They took like something from cinema, like The Man Who Laughs, and they put it in the comics as like a horrifying clown. And like the metaphor is, Batman is dark yet good. He's a symbol of dark yet good, and the clown is a symbol of childhood and happiness and purity and joy, but he's dark and evil, right? And in that way they are the dichotomy that is, that's why they're arch nemesis. But when things start getting circular, as Jim said, and people are only referencing a few years ago, like at what point are we just doomed to a myopia where art can't progress? It feels like a sputtering in the mud instead of an actual driving. Does that make sense, guys? Or am I overthinking this shit? Which I've been guilty of many times on Geekscape. Please subscribe.
No, I, bullshit. Please subscribe.
I mean, what do you think? Like, how do we force people out of that rut? How do we get people to say, hey, like, accept both as the linear progression that narrative is? I love, in a sense, I love requels, and I love things like Furiosa, where you say, okay, we're going to challenge you to put this in a chronological order somewhere ambiguously with the rest of the Mad Max movies, and you make the narrative the way you want to make it. When did this take place in reference to maybe Thunderdome or the other stuff that was going on in Mad Max? And clearly there was a not Jeremy Renner, he was up for it, but clearly there was a casting decision that was after, you know, Mel Gibson. And where do you have this amorphous thing? And I think that we talked about it in a sense last week when James Gunn was talking about how season one of the Peacemaker show wasn't canon, but even though there's holdover castings and a holdover probably narrative beats in season two, it is canon to the new Superman Gods and Monsters universe stuff that he's starting over there at DC. And ultimately you just kind of throw your hands up and be like, hey, shit, it all counts. It all counts. It's all story. It's all someone's first, and it all counts. The Ang Lee Hulk made somebody a fan of the Hulk, right? And is the online policing and need for opinion the real danger here? Not that people shouldn't have an opinion. The First Amendment isn't something that's the core of American value. But like,
right.
At what point should be, like? I don't want to police people, but at some point, do we just not allow some people to share their opinions?
I don't know how we would ever control that, but yeah, as social media has gotten more prominent, it's gotten so much worse. We've been having a lesson with that in Binge Town when it comes to the adaptations from Reacher and Wheel of Time and all these other shows that we're covering. And you'll post something on YouTube or we'll do something on Twitter X, and immediately you just have someone say, like, show sucks, the worst thing ever, because it's not the books, or it's not the, you know, and they're not even, oh, did you watch it? No, I didn't watch it.
What sucks,
you know? I don't understand. And we talk about it on the podcast. Like, I don't understand what you get from that. Like, you really need to spend your time doing that, writing that online. I mean, I've said it, not that I necessarily enjoy, like, we just covered that, and I really, really love season one. And then season two, to me, we talked about on the podcast, it seemed to me that it got more like action cliche-ish, and our boy Alan Richman was talking to Vin Diesel with the latest Fast and the Furious movies and stuff like that. We're jumping out of helicopters. But, you know, what do we always try to say is it's fine to just separate it. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. And if you do, great. You know, you can say, I love this, but I don't love this. And it doesn't have to turn into this ridiculous hate. You know, there's the review bombing that's happening and all that kind of stuff that I just don't understand. And it's a big thing with Wheel of Time, where there's certain characters. And I'm currently reading Wheel of Time, and a lot of the other Binge Town hosts have read it. And some of these people listening to our podcast just can't see that there's two separate characters. There's a character for the show and there's a character for the book, and they may not be adapted exactly right, but they're still a really good TV show character that you can enjoy and watch. And people just don't, you know,
is there a lack of awareness, education, that it sounds like maturity is a bit of an issue too. Like
I think maturity is definitely,
you were a kid critical of Harry Potter, and you were precious about Harry Potter.
I think it's maturity.
And
I do.
I was similarly with X-Men, and I love Wheel of Time. I read Wheel of Time in middle school, going into high school, the Robert Jordan stuff, right? Like the first three, four,
yeah,
and whatever was out by the time I got to high school. And when I got to high school, like freshman or sophomore year, I was finally like, oh, girls don't like this. Put it down, which is such a mistake. I did the same thing with the stand-up bass, and it's one of the biggest mistakes of my life. Geekscapist. Biggest mistake. I started thinking about what other people thought and put down the fantasy novels. Went and got a job at the comic store, which, okay, well, that's more of a lateral move, but like, yeah, maturity. People did the same thing with the Acolyte, which is that Star Wars trailer that just came out, which I think is a spinoff of Obi-Wan, but it's got like the like really negative reviews. And I thought that Acolyte trailer was kind of cool, as somebody who's not like Daniel said, like maybe Star Wars isn't necessarily for us anymore, and maybe it's for younger people now, or people who are appreciating different aspects of Star Wars than Daniel and I do, because I think we're pretty similar in our think of Star Wars. But this Acolyte trailer came out, and of course I'm going to watch it to talk about with you Geekscapists, but it starts with this little orangutan looking, you know, Jedi apprentice kid like sitting in the Jedi temple or something, and I was like, I'll watch it for that little dude, he looks cool. I think Order 66 will have his head cut off his body, but hopefully he escapes like Grogu did. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I like that little orangutan Jedi kid. Yeah, I'm in, which I'm an easy sell. But, but again, people are harshly judging it based on some of the BS they carried over from the casting, possibly a racist opinion of the casting of that character in Obi-Wan. And think what you will of the Obi-Wan series, whatever. We covered it here on Geekscape. But that's some unfair bullshit, uneducated bullshit.
It literally has more dislikes than likes on YouTube. And I think it was about 160,000 dislikes on YouTube for the trailer. And again, I'm very similar to Daniel with the Star Wars. It's probably my one blind spot, or my major blind spot, when it comes to my geekdom. You know, I've seen most of it. I've seen every movie. I've let some of the TV shows go, but some of our other Binge Town hosts are big Star Wars fans, and I had to ask them what they thought, and they liked it so much that they said, should we cover it? Are we going to cover this? Because we haven't covered as much. We covered The Mandalorian. We haven't covered as much of the other Star Wars TV shows. So it brought them back, and I thought, and everyone agreed in our text chat, the marketing with the lightsaber with the blood. I don't know if you saw that poster for the, I was like, marketing, that's an awesome poster.
Even though lightsabers cauterize the wounds,
yeah, right. How the there's no blood that's actually going to be there, but it's okay. See, that's my blind spot.
Yeah,
you know? I don't know.
Yeah, you remember that from the Mos Eisley Cantina? He cut the damn thing's arm off, and it cauterized the wound. Well, was it blood? I don't know, but. Yeah, no, I thought it was a badass trailer. I will watch the show, but it's Geekscape, folks. Like, I want to watch it, and I just want to celebrate this stuff with you guys. Geekscape's out of love, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's where I'm coming from. Dan, I'm gonna check my notes real quick and just see all the topics that I got. Real quick, Geekscape, I'm just gonna mention to you guys real fast. This is a show I didn't think I was going to watch, but Heidi and I exhausted a lot of stuff that we watched together. She watches a ton of stuff without me that she really enjoys, like The Crown and stuff like that. But we get every now and then to like the bottom of our, like, what is it? Like, when, you know, when you don't want to go to the grocery store and you get to like the back of like the cupboard and you're like, we haven't eaten that stuff yet.
The bottom of your
so we're sitting list. There and like, she was on Peacock watching something and it ended. And she's like, well, what do we watch together now? And I was like, okay, I'd heard this is fun. Bear with me. It's based on a video game. It's a video game that I played and was like, it's kind of silly and fun. And I don't know how they make a plot out of it. But it's got Anthony Mackie in it. And I'm talking about Twisted Metal, which I heard it came out last summer. They had a big press push for it at Comic-Con. But I didn't really intend to watch it until people started telling me it was fun. Geekscape, is I'm here to tell you, Twisted Metal on Peacock is fucking awesome. Like, it's so ridiculous. it is a show that does not give any fucks. It is just relentlessly silly. Anthony Mackie is having a blast. This girl from Encanto, who was also in Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
Stephanie Beatriz. Yes,
I liked like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I know she was awesome in that and hilarious in that. She and Anthony Mackie are going nuts on this show. This show is bananas. It is. Thomas Hayden Church is in it. The show is bananas. It's complete anarchy. I guess totally like the video game. And you look, and one of the co-writers of the original Deadpool is one of the main writers on this show. And I think it's Brett Weiss. And this fucking show is so much fun to watch. It's stupid. It's got some real stupid, like loud, crazy stuff. Again, the best definition. This is a show that gives no fucks. It is on PC. And I got Heidi to watch the first episode. And she immediately wanted to watch the second. And this is not a Heidi type show. Like, again, she wants to watch the most Victorian era, like toodly doo shows. You know, she's like, when is, what's the one where they have like, what's the Netflix one where it's like all toodly doo? Bridgerton. Both of those are Heidi shows. Yeah. Both of those shows are Heidi shows. If there's a show where somebody's having tea with somebody else and in a bunch of coilies and their pinkies are out as they discuss the going ons of the grounds, that is a Heidi show. I'm like, no thanks.
That's funny. That's definitely not Twisted Metal.
And I put on this Twisted Metal, and she was like, she like ripped open a Red Bull with her pinky out. It was like, let's do it. I was like, Heidi, why does your voice go crazy? She's like, let's watch more Twisted Metal. I was like, Heidi, please, you're scaring me. She started putting Juggalo makeup on. I was like, Heidi, please, Twisted Metal's changed you. I'm just telling you, Geeks Gamers, go watch that shit. Come back to me and be like, yeah, that show is better than I expected.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard good things. Just like you said,
Demolition Derby. The game is just Demolition Derby.
Yeah,
they made it good. No idea how they did it.
That's pretty fun.
It's crazy.
I don't know if any of us have seen it on Binge Town.
I expect a podcast by the end of the week. I've heard
good things. And I love how it's Will Arnett as Sweet Tooth, voice, right? And then Samoa Joe is the actor for the
wrestler. Yeah, the wrestler. Body.
Samoa Joe.
He was in ECW with my brother. No, not ECW.
TNA.
Ring of Honor before that.
Oh, Ring of Honor. Yes.
Philly. There was my brother was a wrestler, Dan. Nice for bringing up some speed on that. before he was in WWE, my brother was in Ring of Honor. It was like his big thing. And backstage in Philly at this giant warehouse thing that was near the old Spectrum.
The arena, I think.
I met the Samoa Joe. Did not know that was Sweet Tooth, but now I like the show even better because I found him backstage to be very nice. And he was respectful of my brother, and he did a good job taking care of him. That's great. Didn't know it was Samoa Joe. I love the show even now.
Samoa Joe is currently the AEW champion, too. Like, still on very TV. Cool. Very long career. So
very, very, very healthy knees is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, somehow.
Incredible.
Somehow.
Incredible. I did not know that. Daniel, we got to come back to this fib. I'm not going to let it go. You made a comic book. You got to tell me about this comic book. Tell me about it. And in Geekscape, again, this is something I just learned about yesterday. And like, I'm just being facetious with busting you a little bit about having a comic book. But I do like sincerely want to learn about you as a comic book creator and what you did. What is The Fox Came from the Woods? You put this thing on Kickstarter. It was successful to the degree that your initial, I'm just looking at the issue one, you were going to raise 2000, you raised 7,000 plus 100, almost 200 people rolled out to support you on this thing. What was the process of making this comic? What's it about? Where did it come from? Where can the Geekscapers get a copy of it? Because the Kickstarter, it's often done.
We've actually done three now. If anyone's on Global Comics, we have it there. I think you can grab issue one. And then the backstory is really, I'm really into comics and I'm really into movies. And I think, like I said, I've been doing advertising for most of my career. And then basically with the pandemic going home, suddenly like a lot of reasons why I wasn't doing any of those things sort of kind of melted away. And I was like, I should just get really serious about getting some of this stuff done that I've been wanting to do. And the idea is basically kind of like a Stephen King kind of novel meets, you know, like a manga, like, you know, magical girl kind of storyline. So a girl saves a fox in the middle of the street that got run over by a car. And then she almost dies getting hit by this same car. And then they kind of, you know, they become like one superpowered entity and they fight monsters and stuff like that. So it's sort of that kind of story. I think it's fun. And the black and white comic book, the artist is named Elliot Min, or NIW is more like correct. He has a pretty sizable Twitter following. And we had met just, you know, through the job. So we had what did we do together? We'd worked on an animation project because in advertising, I had been a live action director, but also I had done animation as well. So we worked on a SEC pitch, I think, and had kind of made, we just sort of got talking about comics and that kind of thing. And it's something he was into. And I knew I didn't have the time or maybe the skill as an illustrator to sort of draw my own comic. And then, you know, it just looked like everybody was doing Kickstarter comic books. So there's so many like real legitimate, I think it's like a major part of how comics are getting made these days. Same. And I think,
yeah, you got companies like,
you know, like, just like, oh, let's take a shot.
You got companies like Image and Boom and Wildstorm and stuff like that, like established indies. Everybody, basically Marvel and DC are making Kickstarter a part of their strategy for getting a comic up and off the ground. Yeah. Even like well-known properties like Power Rangers, this Amy Jo Johnson, who was the Pink Ranger originally. I spoke with her at Comic-Con on stage. It's in the feed, Geekscapist. It's like from 2 years ago. Last year? Year before? Search for Amy Jo Johnson on the Geekscape feed and you hear our conversation. She was pushing a Kickstarter for a brand new like Boom Comics Power Rangers comic. And it went well, of course, because it's Power Rangers. Their fans are great. But yeah, no, I think what you're saying is right. It's now a piece of the puzzle for comic book publishers. And Geekscape is, I will not lie to you, you're going to see one in the Geekscape future for a comic that I'm making fairly soon. I just need to get further along on the the art is coming in. I'll tell you right now, some of the art is now getting inked and it's about to go to color. But I want the whole book finished before I start like showing you pieces of it. And you know what I mean? I want to show you everything right now. I text Matt Kelly everything. Matt Kelly gets everything. Matt Kelly's going to be like,
I'll be texting him.
Just text you, Jim. But Matt Kelly's like, this comic sucks. I read the whole damn thing because Jonathan can't keep his mouth shut. And I'm really trying not to do that with this project. But it will be a Geekscape thing and you guys will see it eventually. But you can't rush the artist. Awesome. You repeat where we can find this thing.
Do you want to? What's it about?
Oh, I'm not talking about it. Not going to talk about it. I just know that it's you're going to love it. You're going to love it. And if you Geekscapists love it, it's going to be a long series. It's going to be a long series. But if you like that first issue, you'll be loving it for a while. Because we got plans to go along with it, as many comics do now on their thing. Maybe we'll get a publisher, who knows. But Daniel, repeat where we can get the comic, the Fox Came from the Woods. Where's the best place for the Geekscapists to find it if they're listening or watching right now?
Well, that's a great question. I think right now probably Kickstarter, because it's already been run. There's a globalcomics.com, I think.
Okay.
If anyone uses that, it's on there. And then I am thinking about doing going to one of the other ones, like Global does basically similar things, but we've been looking into Webtoon or maybe one of the other ones, like just sort of kind of embracing all the different avenues you can use to get a comic book out. Yeah.
In Geekscape, it's Global Comics. Kind of what we're thinking. I believe Global Comics is with an X. So if you go to the Global Comics website, you're looking for Global Comics X, no CS. globalcomicswithanx.com and what they have now is, if you guys are on a tablet or something, you can actually get it on the App Store. I've never heard of Global Comics, but this is really cool. It seems like, just looking at their website, they have a lot of different types of titles. Some of them are free, like the first issue you can download just see if you like it, and then it gets you hooked. But some popular stuff that you guys do know, like there's Boom Comics, they put out Dune, Scott Pilgrim is on there. There's stuff by Monster Forge, which is my old editor for Miami Vice, Shannon Denton's company. There's a lot of cool stuff that I'm looking right now at globalcomics.com. And of course, you can find The Fox Came from the Woods. But as Daniel says, if you want to just go to Kickstarter and search The Fox Came from the Woods, I guess if they go to that page, I thought that you could only buy stuff as it was being funded, but you can actually continue to buy stuff.
We're going to do another one, you know, so like everyone we've done has been successful. So it's really like, if you were to follow it or do whatever, I don't know, there's like lots of different stuff you can do on Kickstarter, but yeah. I think we'll probably be doing another one or like kind of like a double page issue. Kind of get it. The goal is to sort of make a trade, like a 120 page comic that we can kind of put out, the whole kind of first chunk of story that we've kind of finished at this point. So it's sort of, it's a very, you know, it's a fun, we think it's a fun book. People seem to be liking it. But definitely it's a long process but it's a lot of fun. It's been really wonderful to sort of get it out there and get people who are interested in it. So that's been
It's super cool, man. And congrats on finishing it. And again, Daniel, if you make the trade, or you need to like kickstart the trade or promote the trade or this and that, we are your friends here at Geekscape. And no more secrets. Wonderful. Okay. Like, I know that we didn't know each other as well as your editor and I knew each other, but like, can we just no more secrets? All right. What is the thing that Eleven says on Stranger Things?
Friends don't lie.
Okay. Like, Daniel, I consider you my friend now. And friends don't lie, sir. None of that from now on. Okay. How dare you, first off?
Okay. I promise I won't.
Is that enough silliness, Geekscapist?
Well, I think, with comic book people too, I know sometimes there's like a weird, I'll be the first to say, like, when a famous person or who's some another medium makes a comic book, like, sometimes that's not an exciting proposition. You're like, why is
it's all storytelling, Daniel?
So and so making a comic
book. It's all storytelling, buddy. This is all storytelling. No. I don't know how to get you out of that. I'll shake you by your ankles off a bridge. I don't know how to shake you out of that, but it's all storytelling. And I think that I know that with some of the, we were going to make a Super Action Man cartoon. Super Action Man's a character I created here on Geekscape, running around my underwear at conventions. Then that turned into a comic book. And then we did some little shorts. I continued to, let's just face it, harass people at conventions dressed as Sam in a Speedo. It's me in a Speedo running around. I mean, it's not me, it's like it's somebody else, but all right. So that then during the pandemic, my friends at Lion Forge started an animation studio. They actually have a cartoon coming out, I think it's already out on Max, the Hair Love continuation on Max. And we had talked about doing a Super Action Man cartoon, and I wrote a bunch of scripts for that with my friend Brock Laborde. And when that didn't go forward as a cartoon, I had these scripts, and I was like, maybe we turn it into a comic. That is not the comic we're doing first. But I think that taking it from a podcast character to a comic book to a cartoon, back to a comic possibly, or taking something from a short film to a comic book, or... You know what I mean? Like it's clear that this was a book you wanted to write, or a short story you wanted to make, or a film you wanted to do, and you may still do those things, but this was, our stories are like seeds trying to break through the concrete for the sunlight. And I think that they know where the water's coming from, they know where the sunlight's coming, but they don't know how to break through. And it may be through comics, it may be as a short film, it may be through a song, and maybe whatever, but like, we're storytellers, and all we can really do is plant seeds and push them to grow and water them, and how they finally reach the sunlight and blossom, we can't judge that shit. You hear me, Daniel? I don't want to hear that again.
Okay.
I
mean, that's why I made the comic. I just didn't, you know, the business of all of these.
I'm not here to lecture you. You fucking did it.
You know,
you deserve nothing but getting patted on the back for this.
Well, thank
you. You fucking did it. And not only that, Geekscape, he made this Lucky Day movie. Your Lucky Day on Netflix. You're going to go watch this thing like Jim and I did. I think you're going to enjoy it. You know, I hope you stay in the top 10 for 7 years.
I hope so, too. That'd be really nice.
I'll have to. When we have our podcast where we just talk about whatever the hell we want to talk about on Binstown, I can't wait for a little bit of time to pass so I can talk spoilers for this movie, because I'm trying not to say it on this just because it's still new and I want to talk about it. So I'm excited.
Awesome. Yeah. No,
Geekscapist, I love talking to you, Dan. I want to see what you do next, man. Yeah, I know you've written it 17 times. I know you got more stuff in you, and I can't wait to hear about it, dude. And when you do, friends don't lie, you're coming back. We're going to have the discussion again. Geekscape, I'm going to wrap this up. You're going to subscribe to Geekscape, share it with your friends, do all that stuff. Leave comments. That always helps our visibility. Go to YouTube and watch my conversation with Farscape creator Rockne O'Bannon. I think he may have a new TV show as well in the air. Maybe we connect him with Jim over the Binchtown stuff, because that is our TV like corner of the Geekscape network universe. And then next week, Jim, I've got this actor, and you got to help me with the pronunciation of his last name. This is who I think is coming on the show next week. It's RJ Mitte or Mitte.
I think it's Mitte.
From Breaking Bad. Yes. He was Walt Jr.
Yes, Walt Jr.
Breaking Bad. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's got a movie that's hitting digital soon, and he wants to come on Geekscape. So I'm gonna make sure everything's good with the publicist Geekscapist, but I think that's who you're getting next week. And Jim, if you would like to join me for that conversation,
I would love to. That would be awesome. Thank you.
You're the TV guy.
I'm
here.
The TV guy. So thank you very much. Yes, I appreciate
that. Have you talked to somebody from one of the best TV shows?
My number one. So
is it really?
It is.
Oh my God.
We have a lot of fun with seven of us on Binge Town ranking our favorite shows, and I am the one who puts it at number one, and I'm the only one who does. Everyone agrees it's top five, but it is fun to talk to everyone and shuffle all of your top one, two, three, four. But Breaking Bad has always been my number one since I've watched it.
Well, then let me try and lock that up and get it going and see if that's our guest. If not, Geekscapes will be back regardless. So subscribe to that feed and you'll have more filmmakers like Daniel and more storytellers and comics and TV and video games and all that stuff. That's what we talk about here on Geekscape. Guys, thanks for joining me. Heidi literally just walked in. You probably heard her. With dinner. She literally just walked in and was like, thank you, baby, for going to get that. And guys, thanks for coming on Geekscape. All right.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having
me. Geekscape forever. Folks, I will talk to you next time. Subscribe, leave reviews, and peace.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.